hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the Daily Dan Carlin Podcast for the fifth day of November 2019. It's a Tuesday. God, you know, I'm one day into the new job and I've already forgotten what day of the week it is. In fairness to me, I'd forgotten what day of the week it was before then, too, though. So that's really nothing new. I'm Derek Hunter. I am your host. Thank you for listening, tuning in, telling a friend, sharing the show on social media, rating and reviewing on iTunes, supporting the show on Patreon, and just for being super duper cool, lending me your ears. Thank you for that. We've got an action-packed program for you today. Again, more impeachment news that isn't really news. I don't really get what the big news is here. We'll get into that in a second. We've got all kinds of stuff going on, including something that you probably won't hear about anyplace else. I haven't seen it. I just stumbled across it on the interweb about one of the founders of the Human Rights Campaign is facing a little bit of a problem that involves children. The Human Rights Campaign is, I think, the nation's biggest gay rights activist organization. So they're likely not going to report on that in the mainstream media, but I'll give you the latest and greatest, and you can make up your own mind, because that's the way we work here at the Daily Daily Caller Podcast. We think that you can, we don't want to tell you what to think. I want to give you all the information available and let you think for yourself. If you want to email me for any reason whatsoever, the email address is Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at dailycaller.com. It's just that simple. You can also use that email address. I'm looking around the room. Where the hell is it? I got it somewhere in this room. If you want to enter to win a signed copy of David Limbaugh's Jesus on... There it is, right on my desk. Jesus on Trial, you can email me. You'll have until 10 p.m. Eastern Time on Thursday to enter, and then I'll announce who won on Thursday's program. I would announce who's going to be on the show this Friday for the interview segment, but I'm batting like very little to for announcing guests ahead of time out of excitement and then them falling apart and falling through. So I'm just going to keep who the guest is to myself. Let's just say that they're selling a lot of books right now and leave it at that. That doesn't mean I don't think I'm going to have any copies of the book to give away, though. I don't even think I'm going to have a copy for myself, but we shall see. Okay. I don't know if my copy will arrive in time, but going to work on it. But like I said, we've got a lot of stuff to get to and lots of things to talk about. It's only Tuesday, man. We're talking about Thursday. I don't even know what the hell I'm doing this weekend. Hopefully nothing. You've probably never known anybody who wanted to do nothing less than me. I just yearn for it. I'm going through my emails. This is apropos of nothing. And I get an email from eBay because I buy stuff on eBay. I sell stuff on eBay. And this comes a subject line. I don't know who does their algorithms, but they don't know me. It's like, eBay, I've been with you since the late 90s, and you don't know me at all. Like, love Adidas? This coupon will save you tons on your favorites. And like, oh, I can buy an Adidas hoodie. Like, no, I'm not going to buy an Adidas hoodie. The hell would... I don't love Adidas. When I was growing up, Adidas meant all day I dream about sex. That's what Adidas stood for. But at least that was going around the schoolyard. I don't know if that was scientifically verified or not. But ever since I was probably 12... maybe even younger, I refused to wear logos as best I possibly can. I don't want to be the guy who's like, I always say this, if you want me to advertise for your company, then pay me to advertise for your company. I never understood those people who wore like the Nike shirt that it's just a t-shirt that says Nike. Like, you're being a billboard. Why are you being a billboard? So why are you doing, why would I want to be a billboard and buy this giant Adidas logoed red you could wear hunting and be safe hoodie? Now I say this while I'm wearing a Bazooka t-shirt, but I also loved Bazooka gum as a child, and I loved every minute of the 2.5 minutes that Bazooka held its flavor. And it also, it's the Topps company that made baseball, makes baseball cards. And I love baseball cards. Still collect them one set per year. But it just cracks me up. After more than two decades, I guess, of being an eBay user, eBay's, oh, you love Adidas? We can tell by your search history and the fact that you've probably never typed Adidas in your life. We've got a coupon for you. Like, no, no. Maybe Big Brother isn't as omnipresent and as effective as we all fear when it comes to big tech. I don't know. Maybe I'm old-fashioned that way. Okay, let's get to the program. And by getting to the program, I mean let's give a hat tip to our sponsor. Today's show is Ancient Life Oil. Look, I'm a firm believer that when you're healthy, you're happy. That's why I use CBD oil from AncientLifeOil.com as a natural remedy made with nothing but the purest ingredients and blended with coconut and hemp oils. I'm telling you, it's a home run hitter for your health. I was a skeptic, but now I see why it's so popular. I feel great. The eye strain at the end of the day, a few drops under my tongue, so it's just gone. It's just gone. Ancient Life Oil is non-psychoactive, meaning it provides you with all the benefits without the high. I encourage you to do your own research. Just type in CBD oil benefits for yourself. You'll find out why tens of thousands, over hundreds of thousands of your fellow Americans have made CBD oil a regular part of their healthy routine. Mine is mint chocolate flavor. They have a bunch of different choices for you. If you're ready to live your best life, go to AncientLifeOil.com now, the trusted source for the highest quality CBD oil. That's Ancient, spelled A-N-C-I-E-N-T, LifeOil.com. That's AncientLifeOil.com. One last time, use promo code Derek at checkout. You get free shipping. It'll cost you a couple of bucks to try it. If you don't like it, no harm, no foul. But you'll discover that these people who talk about this stuff aren't crazy. They really aren't. I thought they were. They are not. AncientLifeOil.com. Okay, let's get to the big story yesterday. The Democrats started releasing transcripts from their super double secret probation inquisition in the bowels of the Capitol over there. All these secret. Why did they have to be done in secret? Why? Because you can't really get a lot from a dry transcript. That's part of it. But this is the way that Politico is describing this. And it's telling and it's indicative of how the rest of the media, because they're of a hive mind, they all follow one another. It's sad. Really, it's like a conga line of lemmings willing to go off a cliff, thinking that somehow they're doing the Lord's work. The Dark Lord of the Sith, perhaps, but not really doing anybody else any favors. The Politico story's headline, a smear campaign, an untouchable Giuliani, and an infected State Department, key deposition details. And then here's the subheadline. Here's some of the biggest takeaways from the first closed-door transcript released by House impeachment investigators, meaning Democrats. Why don't you just say the Democrats released? They're running the show. They decide what comes out and when and in what context and what gets redacted. But they want to make it seem as though this is official and everybody's on board with this same stuff. They write, and it's two reporters it took to write this thing, Kyle Cheney and Andrew DiSerdio. I don't know. House impeachment investigators on Monday released the first two transcripts of the closed-door depositions, and they paint a stunning portrait of U.S. diplomats under siege from their own government. The framing here is important. The framing is everything. Really, in the grand scheme of things, they're under siege. These diplomats are under siege from their own government. They work for their government. They are not the captains of the ship. They're, at best, Julie the cruise director. I DVR old episodes of Love Boat because they're so bad. I don't know if you ever watched Love Boat. I'm sure you have fond memories of Love Boat. When I was a kid and they were on in reruns, I'd watch them and they were funny because I had a kid's sense of humor. But now they're just so funny. Plus, the sexism is awesome. Anyway, They are not the captains of the ship. These diplomats do not get to determine foreign policy direction or substance or anything. The president of the United States gets to do that, although you would never know that from the reporting. Why, Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, he was very concerned about what he was hearing and the direction that the U.S. relations with Ukraine were going. So what? It's not his job to worry about such things. If he wants to have the control over U.S. foreign policy towards Ukraine, there's a very simple way he could do that. He could run for president of the United States. That's how it works. The president of the United States is the head of the executive branch. Although you would never know it, the executive branch, especially you would never know it by the reporting, the executive branch actually contains the State Department, which means that the president of the United States is in charge of the State Department and sets the agenda for the State Department, meaning all of foreign policy. That is his exclusive domain according to the United States Constitution. But again, you would never know that by the reporting of this. Oh, Vindman was very concerned. He had to go and run to his bosses and tattle on the president of the United States because somebody overheard something allegedly, and the whistleblower was activated. The protocols for whistleblower were activated, you know, in case of emergency, break glass and unleash whistleblower. It's nuts. It's insane. The president gets to set foreign policy. If it's radically different than the preceding president, no matter how much the diplomatic corps and the permanent bureaucracy in the State Department thought that it was wonderful, it is absolutely 100% irrelevant in the grand scheme of things because the president gets to decide. But not this president. This president is different. This president has been routinely and regularly undermined by the permanent bureaucratic class, the Democrats in Congress, and the media on everything, both foreign and domestic. Because if you listen to the coverage, if you look at the coverage, if you read the coverage, if you're following the coverage at all, and it's not just about Ukraine, it's about everything foreign policy, you get the impression, and the coverage is slanted in such a way that it portrays a story where the president of the United States is somehow thwarting U.S. foreign policy. Doesn't that seem a little bit odd? The president gets to set U.S. foreign policy. The president is the president of the United States. You could like him or dislike him. It doesn't matter. When Barack Obama was president of the United States, he was not portrayed as thwarting U.S. policy towards Iran. He was portrayed as steering it, changing it, redirecting it, bringing it to a new level, trying to prevent Iran from building a nuclear weapon by giving them permission to build a nuclear weapon a decade after he left office, so his fingerprints were completely off of it. It wasn't portrayed as, my God, he is thwarting foreign policy for whatever reason. He was just implementing his own foreign policy, and the bureaucratic deep state went right along with it, willingly, gleefully, happily. They said, yes, Mr. President, we have those pallets full of cash loaded up on those private planes, and we're ready to fly to Tehran to make the hostage exchange. There was no concern about the thwarting of precedent. See, that's everything about Donald Trump. He's upsetting precedent. This is not the way these things were done before. And therefore, when the president started going in a new radical direction, Lieutenant Colonel Lindman thought, this is wrong and I must step in. Well, why? Why? Because you don't agree with the president of the United States? Here's a news flash for you, Lindman. You lost. And I know the media is like, you cannot. Can you believe that people are criticizing this honorable serviceman? How dare they? This is an outrage. Well, I'm sure Congressman Dan Crenshaw would be very interested to know that you are not allowed to criticize anybody who's earned a Purple Heart while in service to this country. I bet Oliver North would be very interested to learn this new bit of information. I think he would have some issues to take up with a great number of Democrats. In fact, I would suspect that any conservative Republican would have an issue to bring up with the media and with Democrats if they served in the military, because there has been a nonstop line of criticism of conservative veterans, injured or not, wounded warriors or not. If they happen to be conservative, they're fair game, and they're treated as though they are political opposition, which is what they are. But when Republicans treat a liberal soldier or a soldier advancing the liberal narrative or a part of the deep state the same way that somebody like my buddy Sean Parnell, who's running for Congress up in Pennsylvania, would be treated, well, oh, there's hell to pay. I guarantee you, in the race for the 17th District of Pennsylvania, Sean Parnell will come under criticism about anything and everything you can possibly imagine, both by his Republican primary opponents, as well as, if he wins the primary, Connor Lamb, the congressman currently representing that district. Will Chuck Todd be clutching his pearls in outrage over that criticism? You can't. What kind of criticism? You can't possibly. Now, you could say, well, it's Lindemann's area of expertise, Ukraine, and therefore. So what? He wasn't elected president of Ukraine policy for the United States of America. He was the advisor to the president, one of many advisors to the president on Ukrainian policy in the United States. That he wasn't listened to happens all the time. It's not news, except when Donald Trump does it. Somehow it's an indication that there is something wrong. There's a breakdown. Donald Trump is going against the advice of his advisors. Yeah, well, Barack Obama went against the advice of his advisors in the bin Laden raid. You heard Joe Biden, if you hear Joe Biden tell the story, he said that they went around the table in the room and everybody was hedging their bets. Oh, it's 50-50, 49-51, whether or not bin Laden's there. Mr. President, the ultimate call is yours, so on and so forth. Biden said the only person who was sure about it and gave a positive, unequivocal recommendation was Leon Panetta, who turned out to be right. Joe Biden, by the way, said he shouldn't go ahead with the bin Laden raid. He needed more proof that bin Laden was there, as if, you know, Joe Biden, foreign policy president. I think all the proof we needed was when Rob O'Neill ventilated his cranium. But this is the way that the left looks at things. Well, you know, did Barack Obama go against the will of his advisors, or did Barack Obama, as they said at the time, and as they continue to say, oh, he made such a gutsy call, he took an awful risk there. Can you believe he's a hero? Just ask him. Well, why is it such a scandal when Barack Obama goes against the advice of his advisors? Because let's be honest, the American people were not particularly happy with U.S. foreign policy for about 10 years when Donald Trump came into office, maybe even 12 years, right after the 2004 election. Starting 2005, when George W. Bush was still president, the American public had started to sour on all of our foreign adventures, mostly because they were aimless pursuits without seemingly any kind of goal and certainly no end. So why in the world would a new president, especially somebody who's not beholden to these clowns, come in and say, well, you know what? I'm just going to let you guys run this thing. Go ahead. Think of me as the CEO of a major corporation, and you're a small company out on your own. I don't want to hear from you unless there's something really bad. Just go and do your thing. That's not the way Donald Trump works. It's not the way the presidency works. So that the president wanted to go in a new direction with Ukrainian policy shouldn't be a problem. It's only a problem when the permanent bureaucratic class decides that they don't like that direction and set about to undermine the president of the United States. And I know there are liberals out there, because I've already gotten the emails preemptively and the tweets going, what do you mean a different direction? You're talking about corruption, talking about this, that, and the other. He's trying to get him to investigate Joe Biden. Read the transcript. Be an adult and read the transcript and do so honestly. There was no quid pro quo up to go dig up dirt about Joe Biden. That's the biggest lie since the last big lie, since the Russian collusion lie. Even still, the difference between Obama's foreign policy and Donald Trump's foreign policy was pretty significant. Barack Obama watched as Crimea was annexed by Russia and did nothing, did not provide lethal military aid to the Ukrainians so that they could defend themselves against the invasion of Crimea and the annexation of Crimea, let alone the further invasion of the rest of Ukraine. Donald Trump gave the Ukrainians the lethal aid that they wanted. Barack Obama gave them humanitarian aid. That's like being somebody's corner man and saying, you know what, I'm not going to teach you how to fight, but I can stitch you up like nobody's business. Here's humanitarian aid. I'll give you some pain pills. I can stitch you up. I'm just not going to teach you how to defend yourself. Donald Trump came in and said, we're going to help these people defend themselves. Here are the weapons systems that you want to protect your border integrity. That was contrary to the Obama administration. Did Lieutenant Colonel Lindman have a problem with that? It seems like it. It seems like he was very upset with all of the president's decisions in regards to Ukraine. It seems as though the existing power structure in U.S. foreign policy had a problem with it. And therein lies the start of the problem for Donald Trump. The Politico story continues. The transcript featuring Marie Yovanovitch, the former U.S. ambassador to Ukraine, and Michael McKinley, a former top advisor to Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, show a cadre of career, non-political officials were deeply concerned by President Donald Trump's posture toward Ukraine and his allies' ultimately successful efforts to take down Yovanovitch. Well, the ambassador to anywhere, not just Ukraine, to anywhere, can be recalled at a moment's notice by the President of the United States. That, again, is part of the job of the President of the United States. They are trying to make the firing of an ambassador, an Obama holdover, by the way, as some kind of scandal. My God, can you believe that he would come in and fire Marie Yovanovitch? She's the ambassador there. He had to have fired her because she was trying to thwart his evil plans. Well, why couldn't it be that he let her go because they were on different pages? Because she was on the Barack Obama playbook, and he's no longer president of the United States. That it took so long as I think a testament to the idea that they wanted somebody in place there. If the Trump administration is guilty of anything, it's coming in, and you get this with business, I think. If you're working in business world, you come to a situation where you're trying to cut a deal for whatever with another company. Now, unless you're making a hostile takeover of that company, the idea is that both people involved want to get the most benefit they possibly can out of the deal. It's not necessarily we're going to screw over the other guy and cut that kind of a deal. That's just not the way business works. If it's mutually beneficial and both are equals, then they cut the deal. They say, all right, well, we benefit in this way, you benefit in the other way, and in the long run, we both benefit. That's the world Donald Trump is used to. That's where he comes from, where people are rational actors, and they go, well, we come out both ahead. This is good for both of us. Neither one of us gets everything we want, but this is pretty good. And he takes that mentality where people are rational actors to the political world, where people are not rational actors, where people work in a different set of assumptions, where they work knowing that they just have to outlast the current person. And if they don't like a decision that's being made, all they've got to do is put their thumb on the scale and make sure that they slow down any progress toward that goal that they don't like, that is contrary to their personal beliefs. And they can, in many times, delay the implementation beyond the lifetime of an administration. That seems to be what's at play here. The president wanted to take a different tactic against Ukraine in dealing with corruption. Remember, I want you to do me a favor had to do with Ukrainian corruption, and it had to do with Ukrainian corruption in regards to the 2016 election. Had nothing to do with Joe Biden. It wasn't until 540 words later that Joe Biden's name was mentioned casually and briefly. So these people in the bureaucratic state feel entitled to their jobs. Mostly, though not exclusively. They also think they're smarter than everybody else, particularly Donald Trump. But they believe that the wrong person was elected president. Now, keep that in mind every time you hear some leftist whine about this is a threat to our democracy or that is a threat to our democracy. They are actively pursuing the opportunity to remove a duly elected president of the United States. And somehow they're doing it because they think, well, they don't think it, they know better. They say he is a threat to our democracy. That is wildly hypocritical. It is completely false. All of the, you know, these reporters, oh my God, Donald Trump's criticisms of the press are incredibly dangerous and a threat to the First Amendment. It's un-American. He is threatening the First Amendment here. He's criticizing the press. Barack Obama actually threw some reporters in jail. His administration actually spied on other reporters that were reporting things that he didn't like. There was no such stink raised about any of it. They went after James Rosen's family. They bugged the phones of 20 Associated Press reporters. You would never know that. James Rosen of the New York Times was in prison, in jail, because he would not give up his source. All of these so-called groups that monitor freedom of the press around the world and warn about oppression were sending up warning flags during the Obama administration. But curiously, none of the hero, first responder, firefighter journalists out there who love themselves more than a fat kid loves cake bothered to report on it or bothered to be bothered by it. But Donald Trump sent a tweet that said CNN is fake news, and that is a threat to our democracy. It's a threat to the First Amendment. Donald Trump said he wished he could change the law so that he could sue these organizations for libel. Why, that is a massive threat to our democracy. He hasn't done anything about it. He's done literally nothing about it. He's just vented about it on Twitter. But that is a threat to our democracy. Barack Obama and his Justice Department tapping the phones of James Rosen's parents and reading their emails, that's nothing. That's the normal course of things. It's somehow Donald Trump, who talks about things, is worse than Barack Obama, who did bad things. So when you listen up to stories about this Ukrainian story, remember, they're not talking about the president doing something. He's changing policy. Can you believe he's changing policy? Yes, I can. That's the job of the president, to come in and implement their agenda. That's why they were elected. Yet the permanent bureaucratic state is actively working against them. And somehow the permanent bureaucratic state is portrayed as the hero in all of this, in story after story. Both witnesses detailed, Politico again, both witnesses detailed several efforts to convince Pompeo and other political supporters to release statements supporting Yovanovitch as she came under attack from Trump and his personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani. But those efforts hit a brick wall, leaving diplomats and other senior officials demoralized and frustrated. Oh, no. You mean that they wouldn't go to bat for the permanent bureaucratic state, that they instead stuck by the duly elected president of the United States? And then you begin to see why these people despise Donald Trump. He did want to go in a different direction. He was focusing much more on the corruption in Ukraine because we have given Ukraine a ton of money in aid and support over the last decade or two. And most of it has disappeared into the pockets of the oligarchs over there. they want the Trump administration, in part, wanted to make sure that that was taken care of. He also wanted to make sure that the Europeans, who have much more to gain from stability in the region than we do, were doing their fair share, which they are not. Yet somehow we have to worry about this poor Ambassador Yovanovitch, who was not a fan of the President of the United States, who had been critical of the President of the United States over in Ukraine to Ukrainian government officials and to U.S. government officials. So that she held her job as long as she did should be the scandal. She should not have been holding that job as long as she did. But that's not the story. It's also not the story that the president could have fired her because he didn't like the cut of her jib. He didn't like the way she wore her hair. He didn't like the kind of car she drove. For any reason whatsoever, the president has a right to fire ambassadors. But somehow, just like when the U.S. attorneys were fired under George W. Bush, that became a scandal. Oh, do you remember that? Oh my God, the Congress investigated that. Democrats were calling for a special counsel. Why did George W. Bush fire these federal prosecutors? When in fact, Bill Clinton did the same thing. And when Barack Obama came in, he did the same thing. Because that's how it works. They're political appointments. In the diplomatic corps, ambassadors are political appointments. Federal prosecutors are political appointments. When the politician who appointed you leaves office, you are expected to submit your resignation. And you should. If they then decide to keep you, that is up to them, and they can determine that on a case-by-case basis. Generally, they tend to keep a few of them, just because they need more time to find qualified people that they like to put into those positions. But when George W. Bush fired them to do just that, because he had, you know, the Washington insiders, he knew everybody he wanted to put in there. His father had gone through this just a decade earlier, so they knew what to do. When George W. Bush did it, it was a massive scandal. And what is he trying to cover up? Who's he trying to benefit by doing this? Barack Obama did it. It was crickets. Bill Clinton did it. It was crickets. Donald Trump changes Ukrainian policy, and it is somehow a threat to our republic, when in fact, it is in keeping with the spirit and the letter of our republic. You won't hear that anywhere in the mainstream media today over the sound of clutched pearls and fainting couches being engaged, because they're just as corrupt in the media as they are in the permanent deep state. Where do you think they get all these anonymous sources from? Hand in glove, backs are scratched. That's the way Washington, D.C. works. All right, I want to move off of this this impeachment mess. I think we've covered it pretty thoroughly for today. There's a piece in the New York Times from the other day that was just brought to my attention yesterday that I saw a screen capture of the headline and I thought, that can't be real. This can't be the New York Times. This can't be written by an adult. And it turns out that all of those things, in fact, are true. So looking at this story here, the headline kind of says it all. Wear clothes, then you're part of the problem. Yes, all you non-nudists out there, you're part of the problem, ladies and gentlemen. The subheadline, making, washing, and tossing apparel has a big environmental cost. So not only is the new climate change the new church for the left, it's a nudist cult. Not kidding. It's written by somebody named Elizabeth L. Klein. Ms. Klein is the author of The Conscious Closet, The Revolutionary Guide to Looking Good While Doing Good. Because everything is political to these people. God, has there ever been a group of people more in desperate need of a hobby? Ever? Climate protests drew millions around the world in September. Many of the Democratic presidential candidates have rolled out ambitious plans to cut carbon while making the economy greener. There's a sense of momentum to solve our planetary crisis, except that everybody's ignoring, you know, China and India, where all the CO2 is being released from. We're back down to 2000 levels, and China and India are just going, yeah, let's burn it. Let's burn it. There's a sense of momentum to solve our climate planetary crisis, and yet a leading cause of climate change remains persistently overlooked or trivialized. Clothing. Because you'll never be woke enough. You will never, ever be woke enough. Yesterday, I think I talked about the kids, or I meant to talk about the kids. I might have done that on the radio yesterday. The kids in New Mexico who are like, okay, now the Democratic governor is giving you free college, 2 or 4 year schools, tuition free, but it's being funded with money from taxing the oil and gas industry. And that's not good enough. That's not woke enough. So they're not happy about that. You'll never be woke enough. And apparently you'll never be nude enough. The clothing and footwear industry is responsible for 8% of global greenhouse gas emissions, nearly the same as the entire European Union, according by the study to a study by the environmental services group Qantas. Without abrupt intervention, the industry's impact on the climate is on track to increase by almost half by 2030. Oh, no. But clothing does not appear to be mentioned in the Democratic Party's candidates' climate plan, nor is it in the Green New Deal proposed by House Democrats. And while it's coming up more in coverage of low-emission lifestyle changes, it's still viewed as a problem mostly for fashionistas. Indeed, caring about clothes is often considered frivolous, at odds with concerns about the fate of the planet. The actor and environmentalist Woody Harrelson. If Woody Harrelson burns more weed than your average Cheech and Chong movie, but hey, you know what, he's an environmentalist, expressed this view when he hosted Saturday Night Live the week after recent climate marches in New York. Quote, "I was always anti-fashion," he said, "because it always seemed to me there were more important things to care about." Exactly. There are significantly more important things to care about, but there's no money and power in caring about those things. Like melting ice caps, the Amazon burning, and the pollution of our water, air, and food. What planet do these people live on? Many people fail to see how the $2.5 trillion apparel industry is connected to our environment, which means we persistently pay no attention to how it might help us solve our climate crisis. You mean I can still drive a car and fly if I just don't buy any new clothes? Well, done. And apparently I've been an environmentalist for a very, very long time. But in that little bit, there is the real key. $2.5 trillion apparel industry. They want a bite at that apple. It's all about money and power, and they want a taste. They're like the mafia, man. They want to wet their beak. They need to get their taste of the money in every industry. It's a nice industry you got here. It'd be a shame if we had to shut you down via regulation. We're going to have to tax the hell out of you. Clothes are easy to ignore because they're made far away and have throughout history been made by enslaved, underpaid, and low-paid laborers, often by women. God, clothes are racist, too. Not only are they destroying the planet, they're racist. Everybody nude right now. But clothing affects every other environmental problem we care about. Oh, I don't think that you and I have the same concerns there, lady. That's just me talking. But clothing affects every other environmental problem we care about. Let's say you wear a cotton t-shirt. It required thousands of gallons of water to make. If that t-shirt is viscose rayon, whatever, it may as well have come from a tree felled in the Amazon. Viscose rayon is made from plants. And if it's polyester, acrylic, or nylon, you're wearing plastic! When those plastic clothes get washed, they junk up our oceans with microplastic pollutions. Fortunately, some clothing companies are waking up to the climate crisis. I love it. You know, you can't make stuff out of cotton. You can't make stuff out of rayon or acrylic or nylon or polyester. What is it? We all have to wear wool all the time? Again, they want to make everybody Amish, except them. Fortunately, some clothing companies are waking up to the climate crisis. A growing number of brands are bowing to grassroots pressure and consumer surveys that show that sustainability and ethics are top concerns for young shoppers. Yes, let's all cater our industry toward people with the least money. In August, the Group of Seven Summit, 32 clothing brands got together to set science-based targets for emissions reductions. Since then, 24 more brands have signed on this so-called Fashion Pact. Kering, the luxury conglomerate that owns Gucci, Yves Saint Laurent, and Balenciaga, I don't even know. Who knows? If you're buying these brands, you don't give a crap, has set a goal for all its brands to go carbon neutral. But fashion can't go green on its own. No, it can't. It never could. Why could it? They must have mandates and taxes and force everybody else to do other things. It won't even make a dent in the problem without international cooperation and mainstream attention. Two reports, one by Stand.Earth and the other by the Institute of Public and Environmental Affairs. Well, they seem like straight shooters right there in the names, don't they? Show that most brands aren't measuring their emissions, much less cutting them. You mean they're too busy doing their damn jobs to worry about your hippie agenda? How dare they? The hell they say. It's so ridiculous. That's because the vast majority of greenhouse gas emissions the clothing industry churns out happen in the supply chain, in factories and farms that brands don't own, and that are spread out and far away. The clothing industry, like most industries, is also stubbornly reliant on fossil fuels. You mean they want to get their stuff into places where consumers can buy them? Is that what it means to be stubbornly dependent on fossil fuels? Because if you make it in a factory in Indonesia, which would you prefer? That they ship the product to where the customers are, or that everybody who goes, you know what, I need a new pair of pants, hops on a plane to Indonesia? They're nuts. They're used to fire up boilers in textile mills to make the pesticides dumped onto cotton fields and to produce the gobs of chemicals that dye and finish fabrics. Fossil fuels are also the feedstock of synthetic fibers, which now make up the bulk of what we wear. Getting clothing off oil will not be easy. If you've ever been to a mall and you just look around a mall, then you begin to see why nudity is not an option. So we're just going to have to keep wearing clothes, sorry. The clothing industry, like most industries, is also stubbornly reliant on fossil... Oh, wait, no. Consumers have an important part to play in making fashion sustainable. We can work to extend the life of all clothing by switching more of our purchases to secondhand and online resale, renting for special occasions, and repairing clothes instead of throwing them away. That's what I've been doing my whole life. I've been poor most of my life. So who knew? I'm the most green person in the world. I guarantee you Leonardo DiCaprio didn't wear sport coats to school, ironically, in high school because they were $3 a piece at the Salvation Army. I did. We can choose manufactured and upcycled apparel like those offered from Elaine Fisher and Converse. I don't even know who Eileen Fisher and Converse. I know Converse. I wear Chuck Taylors all the time. We can turn our washing machines down to cold and consider air drying more of our laundry. We should support companies that are making genuine efforts to curb their carbon footprint and to source more sustainable materials. The Good On You app and Stand.Earth's rankings are places to find them. Or just wear whatever the hell you want. What a crazy idea. We also need activists, journalists, scientists, investors, and academics who focus on sustainability to include clothing in their work. We need technological innovation and investment in new fibers and manufacturing processes, deeper research, and cutting-edge ideas. How about you get a hobby? Is that a cutting edge idea? Is that cutting edge enough? Good God, these people. We need, and here it is, we need government action and innovative policy that accounts for the global impact of the stuff we buy. See, the left is angry. They are beside themselves that somebody's happy doing something they don't like. It can't be allowed to happen. Other countries have already made progress. France has passed a bill banning the destruction of unsold clothing and requiring large companies to ensure environmental and human rights in their supply chains. You really need a bill that says don't destroy the clothes that you, don't burn the pile of clothes that you didn't sell? When somebody, you know, World Series went to 7 games. The Nationals won, and within 30 seconds, they're all wearing Nationals World Champion, World Series Champion t-shirts. There were Astros World Series Champion t-shirts that were printed up and ready to go, and there were a bunch of them so that they would be in stores that night. Those are all shipped off to, you know, some village in a third world country somewhere. Now the kids are selling. They think the Astros won the 2019 World Series. Actually, they're probably used to it because they probably get dumped all the runners-up gear and everything. But how far do you have to go? How much control do these people want? And the British Parliament's Environmental Audit Committee, how very Orwellian, has spent the last 2 years looking into how to make the fashion industry more sustainable. We need a champion for the fashion movement in Washington, perhaps Nancy Pelosi, whose 6-year-old Max Mara coat went viral last year. How devoid is your life that you get excited about what coat the Speaker of the House is wearing? But it could also be a Republican, a number of whom are talking about climate action and should be, and who should see the potential in green manufacturing. We need major fashion hubs like New York and Los Angeles and former manufacturing giants in the South and Midwest to join the cause too. But first, we need all people who care about climate change to understand that they're part of the problem and the solution just by wearing clothes. God, you know, the liberal drum circles like the Occupy Wall Street and the marching mutants from anywhere in the country, wherever mutants happen to be marching at the time, they, I think, actually are environmentalists. They seem to wear the same things all the time. They certainly don't seem to shower all that often. And without showering, if you're not going to shower for a couple of weeks stretch, what's the point in washing your clothes? They also all wear all black. So black absorbs heat. So, you know, they're taking heat out of the environment. When I saw this, I thought it was a joke. When I saw the headline, I thought it was a joke. Now that I've read it, I still think that it's a joke. But I think it's a serious joke. I think this is something that I guarantee you will end up, since it was in the pages of the New York Times, will end up being posed, a question posed to a Democrat running for president. Any Republican running for any office will look at somebody cross-eyed and go, what? You need help. But Democrats out there will believe in this crap, will buy into this crap. And what follows this will be, and it goes back to that $2.5 trillion number in the fashion industry, for people who are wanting to spend more money than exists every year to buy their seat in the White House. It is, we have to regulate this. We have to mandate this. We have to, of course, tax that in order to make sure that there is compliance. We can't just mandate and go on the honor system that these people are lowering their carbon footprint. They've got $1.5 or $2.5 trillion or whatever. We need a taste of that to throw in the general pot so that we can then effectively monitor this industry. Right now, our founding fathers are turning faster than a high-speed drill in their graves while vomiting uncontrollably over garbage like this, that the government, the federal government, would be involved in anything like this is an anathema to what this country was founded on. They aren't yet, but I guarantee you, this is the first salvo. The first salvo always comes off like a crackpot, like a lunatic, like a joke, like a prank. It causes people to shake their heads going, what is wrong with these people? Well, there is a lot wrong with these people, but unfortunately, there are a lot of these people. They are very loud, very vocal, very animated, and very motivated, and they will get politicians to pander to them, to get into that situation, to go there, ladies and gentlemen. I guarantee it. So what's crazy today will be policy tomorrow, even if it's not exactly tomorrow. It will be eventually. Or sooner or later, they're going to mandate us all just being nude. And I guarantee you, nobody wants that. With two stories about Facebook here, shifting away from nudity ever so briefly. I love talking about nudity. Not really. The left is now turning on Facebook, which is funny because the left gets a ton of money from Facebook. It's just that Facebook and Twitter shadow bans conservatives. Twitter does all it can to marginalize conservatives, to mute conservatives. And Facebook was trying to do that, but they're a little bit more pragmatic. They recognize that once they start deciding what content is okay and what content isn't okay, that they'll end up in a situation where they will come into a liability for the content that does make it up on their website. And they have far too many users to be able to police all their content. So they basically have, at least publicly, adopted the idea that Facebook is a kiosk. Facebook is the billboard in the student center of life, and anybody can post whatever they want up there. Now, if you're posting threats or something like that, and anything more than your band is going to play or your band's looking for a new drummer, then they'll step in and say, you can't do that. But in general, they want to and need to be the kiosk because it exempts them from all kinds of liability. Well, this has upset a great many people, including Hillary Diane Rodham Clinton Jr. III. Washington Free Beacon has the story. Clinton continues to blame others for 2016 loss. Two-time failed presidential candidate Hillary Clinton on Friday continued to blame others for her 2016 loss, this time faulting Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg. Clinton targeted the tech giant while speaking at a screening of The Great Hack, a documentary about the Cambridge Analytica scandal, which really wasn't a scandal. It's a scandal because conservatives bothered to use the data, managed to figure it out. The left was doing the same damn thing. She said Zuckerberg should, quote, pay a price for the damage she believes Facebook is doing to U.S. elections, according to the UK Guardian, as speculation rises about Clinton's potentially jumping in the 2020 Democratic primary. Oh, God, please let her jump in. She says that propaganda on Facebook will continue to have an impact because it works. Quote, it's only going to be more powerful going forward because it is more well-tested. They know what they were successful at. We are getting warning signals all the time about what is happening right now and how it is likely to affect our next election. Clinton went on to say that Cambridge Analytica, which illegally obtained Facebook profiles to target voters, was the tip of the iceberg. Quote, when Facebook is the principal news source for more than half of the American people and the only source of news that most of them pay attention to, and if it announces that it has no responsibility for the airing of false ads, how are you supposed to get accurate information about anything, let alone candidates running for office? Well, I thought that was the job of the media. You know, I don't know. It's not anymore. They're the worst propagandists out there, but she's very, very upset and blissfully unaware. During the screening, Clinton was asked whether she believes Zuckerberg's closed-door meeting with Donald Trump led Facebook to change company policy on fact-checking, quote, false, deceptive, or deliberately misleading content by politicians. She replied that she couldn't, quote, draw any conclusions about closed-door meetings, not only with Trump, but with Tucker Carlson and with Breitbart and many others that have been going on at Facebook quarters. Facebook headquarters. There's nobody, my daughter, the 2-year-old Quinn, talks about, she's got the PJ Mask headquarters and she calls it PJ Mask quarters. So Hillary Clinton is on the same level. My 2-year-old is on the same level as Hillary Clinton. Quote, if I were a conspiratorial mindset, I might suggest that there seems to be some connection. Now, Hillary Clinton doesn't like conspiracies. She had nothing to do with Epstein's suicide. And then CNN Business has this story. The left, again, CNN, champions of free speech and beholden to the First Amendment. A controversial policy allowing politicians to run false ads on Facebook will extend to the United Kingdom as the country prepares to vote in an historic December election, Facebook confirmed to CNN Business. It's the job of journalists, supposed to be, to make sure that politicians are telling the truth. They don't really care about the truth. They care about their vision, their version of the truth, what they view as true, the narrative being fed. If anything fits that, they'll report it. They'll report it. Won't bother fact-checking. You know, you got one anonymous source that says something that really makes Donald Trump look bad. Well, let's run to press with that, and we'll figure out whether or not it's true later. Got to be first. Can't be right. The policy is being championed by Facebook executive Nick Clegg, the former deputy prime minister of the United Kingdom, who himself once complained about lies spread during the 2016 Brexit referendum. The company will not fact-check ads run by British political parties and the thousands of candidates running for election to the House of Commons. Ads from other political groups like the pro-Brexit group Leave EU will be subjected to fact-checking, the company confirmed. So politicians are free to lie, and the left is beside them. So politicians are free to lie all the time. They can open their mouths, listen to any speech by any politician, and you will find lies in it. It is only one person, one politician's lies that the media ever pays attention to. Elizabeth Warren is out there saying, you know what, this $50 trillion health plan, nobody's going to have to pay anymore except for the 600 billionaires in this country, and we've got it all paid for, and all the 2 million people who work in health insurance, why, they'll end up in other jobs. Nobody's out there calling BS on that. But Donald Trump says that the Nationals' celebration at the White House, which we'll have a story on in a second, was the biggest celebration at the White House. They're probably fact-checking that right now as I speak. Tomorrow it will be splashed. You know what? It was seven more people at this celebration or that celebration at the White House. And this is just another one of Donald Trump's lies. I don't want to live in a world where any company gets to decide what is acceptable truth, what their version of true is. Facebook is not a company that I trust. I don't recommend you put in a bunch of personal information into Facebook. I use Facebook. I use it mostly for professional purposes. And everything I put in Facebook is the bare minimum. My birthday is correct. The birth year is wrong. It's like 1923 or something like that. Why? Because they don't need to. They can send me ads for denture cream or something like that, or AARP memberships. I'm fine with that. I don't give them information. And you know what? They don't get my information that way. Every time I log into Facebook, they're saying, you can confirm your account by adding your telephone number. Yeah, I sure could, but I'm not going to give you my phone number. Sorry, them's the breaks. They want that information, not because they want to secure my account, although that may be part of it. They want that information because it's more information about me, and they can track me more with that. I'm not interested in that. I'm going to use them with the understanding that they're using me too. I am the product that they're selling. I get it. So I go into it with my eyes wide open. The last thing in the world I would ever do is trust some guy who probably hasn't seen daytime sunlight, not through a pane of glass, in their adulthood. since puberty with determining what is and isn't acceptable political discourse, what is and isn't allowed to be said, what is and isn't true when it comes to a health policy debate or a foreign policy debate or what constitutes a hate crime or anything like that. I'm not going to trust those people. I'll figure it out on my own. That the left has no faith in the American public and their ability or their desire to figure things out on their own. They have spent their entire existence trying to boil down everything into a pureed, spoon-sized, shovable into the mouth bit of information that is easy to digest and not requiring any thought whatsoever, because thought is the kryptonite to the left. So I applaud Facebook for saying we're not going to get into the fact-checking business for politicians. We're not going to do it. Politicians, you want to do that? Hold each other accountable. Media, if you're so concerned, get involved and do an honest job. They're incapable of doing an honest job, but it's a thought, and it's the thought that counts. These people, there's a big threat to the First Amendment, and now they want to impose government to determine what is and isn't a fact in political advertising. Yet Donald Trump is the biggest threat to the First Amendment that ever existed. They're wildly unaware, or they're hoping against hope that you are. I don't know which would be worse, which is more offensive, but neither one of them is good. Finally today, the Washington Nationals went to the White House to celebrate their world championship. And there was outrage, of course, because I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but Donald Trump is president of the United States. And I believe there are some people who have a problem with that. Well, two players in particular began trending on social media. Kurt Suzuki, the catcher, when he was called up, everybody's like, hey, you can go ahead and say something to the throngs of fans here at the White House. Kurt Suzuki put on a Make America Great Again hat, and that was outrage. The left was beside themselves because that is a symbol of white supremacy and racism, and Kurt Suzuki is off-white. Kurt Suzuki is Asian, as his name might indicate. But he didn't care because he's a fan of the President of the United States. Of course, if you go by the admission standards of Harvard, Asians aren't really minorities, and it's okay to discriminate against Asians because they're too smart when it comes to admissions. Seriously, look it up. That's that perverted. Then Ryan Zimmerman came up. Now, he, I believe, was the first player ever drafted by the Nationals. It's good to see. I love seeing somebody who's played their whole career with one team finally get that loyalty to their team rewarded. And him winning the World Series when he's in the sunset of, he's not done yet, I don't think, but in the sunset of his career. I always like to see that. So that's why I loved when Steve Yzerman finally won the Stanley Cup after some really lean years in Detroit with the Red Wings. So he stepped up to the microphone and he really, really pissed off the left simply by saying the following.
Mr. President, me and my teammates, first of all, I'd like to thank you for having us here. This is an incredible honor that I think all of us will never forget, and we'd also like to thank you for keeping everyone here safe in our country. And continuing to make America the greatest country to live in the world.
That's right. Thank you, man. That's so nice, man. Thank you very much. Whoa.
Ryan Zimmerman, World Series champion, will now become enemy of the people. If you noticed, there were a few players that didn't show up, that didn't want to show up. I can't think of their names off the top of my head, and I'm not going to give them the publicity. You can find out just by searching online who they are. And they got glowing coverage in the media. Oh, they were heroes for not going. And every athlete that says, I'm not going to that stinking White House, is treated as a conquering hero. What they're conquering, I don't know. But they're just wonderful people. And they will stand up against injustice and not shake the hand of the President of the United States. And that so many Nationals went, had a whole bunch of people, and some of them are supposedly conservatives, out there saying, well, you know, the baseball players, they're largely what, millionaires, whites, and Christians. I don't know if you've ever watched a baseball game in the last decade, but not, I don't know about the, well, the millionaires is probably true. The Christian thing is debatable. Who knows? Who cares what their religion are? I don't know. I don't base my like or dislike on a player. But the white part is increasingly not true. But it doesn't matter. I mean, as evidenced by the fact that Kurt Suzuki was up there amongst other people. But the idea, oh my goodness, that they would praise Donald Trump. This is an outrage. And Ryan Zimmerman, there will be people who will burn his jerseys. There will be people who disavow him. He will be canceled and complained about by the left now for the rest of his life. So he's incredibly brave for stepping up and saying, look, thank you for keeping us safe. There's no doubt that the president has kept us safe so far. Things are going pretty good from a national security standpoint, despite all the pearl clutching and guffawing over every decision that he's made, because it was him who had made it, not the decision itself. But the left was very, very upset that the Nationals went. But you could hear there was a big crowd there. So every story that talks about this, I guarantee you, I haven't looked. I don't need to look. I've been doing this long enough. We'll manage to shoehorn into it. Donald Trump was booed at the World Series. Donald Trump, when he went to the Nationals Game 5, he was roundly booed. Yet the team still said nice things about him. How sad is it that professional athletes not being jackasses to the president of the United States is somehow not only news, but it's bad news for the athletes not being jackasses to the president of the United States. Tells you more about the people demanding they be jackasses to the president of the United States than it does about the president of the United States, I think. Anyway, that is all the time we have for today. Don't forget, you can listen to me live from 9 to noon Eastern Time, Monday through Friday on WCBM.com or the WCBM app. This podcast will continue unabated and unedited every day as well. So if you want 4 hours of me, seek professional help. Just don't get cured. Just maintain it. You just want to get maintained. You don't want to be cured. You can keep doing that. You can email me to enter the signed David Limbaugh book, Derek@dailycaller.com. The Patreon website's patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast. Email me whatever you got, whatever you want. And most importantly, keep spreading the word. Thank you. I love all the emails I get. Well, I've turned so many people onto this and I've turned so many people onto that. It's you guys that are making this show grow. It ain't me. I'm doing the same thing, and I'm getting a different result, and that's because of you. So my hat's off to you, and I will be back here tomorrow. It's almost Wednesday. Tomorrow's Wednesday, hump day. Then we can start dreaming of the weekend. I'll see you then.
I would also like to thank you for keeping everyone here safe in our country and continuing to make America the greatest country to live in the world.